This episode of the Press Row Podcast is proudly brought to you by Out of the Park Baseball 17, the most authentic baseball strategy game ever made. And this is the Out of the Park Baseball you've been waiting for. Not only does Out of the Park Baseball 17 feature its trademark immersion into a hardball strategy and management experience like no other, including nearly 150 years of baseball history in a single package, it now includes the MLBPA license for the first time, along with the returning MLB.com license, too. This means all the real teams, players, logos, ballparks, and more. You simply cannot get more authentic. You know, there are so many community-driven features added this year, we can't list them all here. But a few highlights include accurate 2016 opening day Major League rosters, plus accurate minor leagues, too, with authentic names, logos, and rosters, and majors and minors dating back over more than a century. You've got an all-new historical exhibition mode that lets you realistically, and that's important, realistically play teams from any year and era against each other in a single game or in a series. You've got accurate representation of 2016 MLB player faces, showing their emotions over the season and their careers and aging over time, thanks to the MLBPA license and face gen technology. There's some beautiful improved visuals on and off the field, and some serious improvement in the simulation times as well, thanks to using dual-core processing improvements. And there's so much more. And even better, if you pre-order now through the Press Row Podcast, you will get a special discount on top of the already really impressive pre-order bonuses. So you'll get a 10% discount off of the retail price of $39.99, plus the pre-order bonus of $5 off and an extra Steam key, just by going to ootpdevelopments.com and click on the pre-order banner, and then enter the code PRESS17 at checkout to not only get that discount, but also, of course, you help the Press Row Podcast, you help indie sports game development, and you help all the people who have worked so hard to bring you the great game of Out of the Park Baseball 17. So once again, just go to ootpdevelopments.com, click on the pre-order banner, then enter the code PRESS17 at checkout for that great special discount and to support the Press Row Podcast. Out of the Park Baseball 17 releases on March 22nd on PC, on Mac, on Linux. We can't wait. Thank you very much.
Hey, welcome back to the Press Row Podcast. I'm your host, Brian Weedeye, Pasta Padre. And with things really now getting into gear for the very late winter and that very early spring release time frame, I'm joined by Owen Good from Polygon and TJ Lowerman, that sports gamer who's also representing Out of the Park Developments. We'll be discussing a lot to do with MLB The Show 16, which is now just a month out from release, along with the presence of tattoos and NBA 2K being threatened, some news on what will be included in the UEFA Euro content coming to Pro Evolution Soccer 2016, and some of my quick thoughts on the new NBA Live mobile game later. But first, it's been a while since we've been together for a podcast, so let's check in on what everybody's been up to. TJ, other than being deathly sick, what's been going on with you lately?
I've actually been getting into MLB The Show 15, or sorry, MLB 15 The Show.
Yeah, you gotta correct that, yeah.
Yeah, I've been playing that a bunch, Diamond Dynasty, the last couple nights. Fly balls to that warning track, they happen way too frequently.
I saw one, yeah, you get robbed. There's a sense of getting robbed when you hit it right to the warning track, isn't there? That's one of the most frustrating things. I thought you were actually going to mention dropping fly balls, which is something hopefully we won't see a whole lot in MLB 16.
Yeah, that happened like 2 weeks ago when Ted Williams was still dropping fly balls for me on a regular basis, but I've since taken him out of the lineup.
Yeah. Anything other than the show there? Are you just kind of preparing? Well, I know you're working on stuff for Out of the Park Baseball.
Yeah, I've been playing with the beta for that and getting ready for the show to come out. Baseball season is my favorite time of gaming in the year, so.
Are you running streams on that every week? Is that what I've been seeing?
Yeah, every Wednesday at 9 o'clock on twitch.tv/OOTP developments. I stream some Out of the Park Baseball stuff. Actually, this past week, we had one of the developers, Matt Arnold, on just answering a bunch of questions about the game this year.
Yeah, so awesome.
That was a lot of fun.
Yeah, and that game's only a matter of weeks away, too. So there's a lot of stuff coming out in the next month. How about you, Owen? What have you been playing? What have you been spending your time on in the last few weeks?
Well, like TJ, I've gotten sick, too, and that sort of makes you not want to do anything. However, I did I did play Firewatch, and that's not a very long game, but it's a very memorable game. And anybody who has lived in the interior West or the Northwest, you know, Brian, you know what it's like to read about wildfires and sort of that concern over the summer. Mm-hmm. It's a really memorable game, and it was a lot of fun, and it had a lot of motifs to it that really took me back to a time. I'm 42, I'm going to be 43 in this year. Took me back 25 years, and it was a lot of fun. Outside of that, Star Wars Battlefront, actually revisited just now, Tiger Woods PGA Tour 14.
Wow, what brought that up?
I was curious because when you play the advanced swing measure or swing controls in Rory McIlroy PGA Tour, I'm playing on Xbox One and the thumbstick I use feels a little loose. So I went back into Tiger Woods 14 and I was like, you know, why did it feel like I had more control over the right thumbstick? And it's, I mean, we could get into a real granular discussion of this. The point of me bringing this up is I found out that the country club I created has been deleted, even though online support remains.
So the servers are still up for that.
Yes, they are. But the country club I had gone. And I don't know if they just did like a wipe at some point because of licensing or whatever. Because I went and looked at the country club list and it's the open list is a lot shorter and has some weird prefixes to it and things like that. But it's still there. And if you want to create one, I guess you can. And mine is called Roster File, which is my column at Polygon. But I went back to the practice facility, which I swear to God, you know, it's, I know that the one that they have in Tiger 14 is based on Augusta Nationals. They should introduce something like this in Rory 16, because even if it's just a generic practice facility, because you got to have somewhere to work on your shot. And anyway, I was screwing around with that, played some Battlefront, played Red Dead Redemption, which I downloaded to my Xbox One in the
when you had an opportunity to do so.
Yes, but here's the damn thing about it. Those Microsoft, God, so you downloaded it. You downloaded the game when they mistakenly made it available, and you played it, and then they put in a fix where you couldn't play it while you were online. Okay, fine. I'll just play it where I'm offline. But then they put in a title update, or excuse me, a system update to Xbox One, and now that renders the game completely unplayable. Hmm. Even though it remains on your hard drive, it's unplayable until Take-Two Interactive and Rockstar decide they want to publish this thing to Xbox One. So anyway, that's what I've been monkeying around with.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, Owen, you have not been playing XCOM 2? That was your sports game of the year, wasn't it?
Argumentatively, it was. Yes. And this is a great regret.
The first one, that is, yeah.
XCOM 2 came out when I got sick and had a couple of other things going on. And it's one of those games where I go, I've got to be serious about this when I start it, because otherwise I'm going to restart it 500 times.
Uh-huh.
And I've just not sat down with it.
Yeah. So I have been playing XCOM 2. I'm not too far deep into it, but yeah, it's a lot of really good stuff they've done with that. It's, you know, it's only on PC. It's one of the few, you know, I built a PC rig late last summer, and so this is, you know, one of the probably the most intensive, like graphics intensive game that I've played on PC ever. I generally don't play games on PC, so with the exception of now, like the management simulations that we have coming out. And the game's really good. I love the first XCOM Enemy Unknown, right, was the name. So I like the first one. Sequel's really good. It's got some stuff that makes it better than the first one, and the story picks up years later. But yeah, I am at the point where I'm like, oh, I think I'm boned after after a few early deaths and after missing a few missions and stuff like that. So I might have to actually start that one over. The other thing I've been playing lately is the NBA Live mobile game, which I mentioned earlier, and I'll talk about later in the show. But it's mostly been, you know, I've been spending a lot of time covering and preparing for the wave of these upcoming sports games. So let's get to one of the major ones coming up, and that's MLB The Show 16. And a few podcasts back, we talked about Road to the Show and kind of the reception to the new features in there, the work that had been done in there. Now we're at the point here, the end of February, where Sony San Diego, the developers, they're pretty much done with the game, if not actually literally done with the game, as far as going gold and manufacturing. Any work they'd be doing from here on out essentially would just be for patches or server-side updates. So we've been getting a lot more information on the game. They've been holding regular streams. They've been putting out a bunch of developer blogs. So I'm going to run down some of the stuff that has come out lately, and then we're going to, you know, talk about what really strikes us the most, maybe what we're a little disappointed by or whatever it might be. So they've gone through gameplay, which is essentially, if you look at their list of features for gameplay, it's like 90% about new animations in the game and throughout the game. There's some touches of personality and emotion, things like the Jose Bautista bat flip, which I put up on Twitter today from their stream. Things like that that are really going to kind of enhance the emotional moments. And then balancing gameplay, things like the quick pitching and the steals and the bunt exploits. This is all stuff that if you played online, you know a ton about already. TJ, I'm sure, knows a ton about all these tactics that people used.
Yeah.
So TJ, gameplay. Is there anything here that, you know, actually, let's just start with that quick pitching, steals, and bunts. What do you think of what they've done kind of to address those things?
I mean, they're talking a good game so far, and if it actually turns out to be better online, that's huge, because at the beginning of the season last year, bunting was still a huge problem online. People would be laying down perfect bunts, or your pitcher and catcher just couldn't get there to field it fast enough and make the play. Mm-hmm. And stealing was obviously a problem.
Stealing has been an issue for 5 years, really. Yeah. As long as online has been functional in some capacity for the show, stealing has been an issue there. And then bunting. So what they're doing with bunting is you're actually going to see a differentiation in the skill levels of bunting for players. Last year, you could lay down a perfect bunt with anyone. That shouldn't be the case this year. Steals, hopefully. Yeah, hopefully that's addressed, because I would play Rich Grisham. I love the guy, Rich Grisham. And he's the Royals, which you can make the excuse this is fine. But if he gets a guy on first base, I just assumed he was on third base at that point, because it would just be easy steal to second, easy steal to third.
Well, now I can see the utility in differentiating stealing. Mm-hmm. You know, if you can just take a base automatically, I mean, that's ridiculous. But bunting, I mean, come on. Well, how many people are bunting in online play?
Everyone, right, TJ?
Tons of them.
Yeah,
tons of them.
Here's the problem.
Was bunting as effective as stealing?
Bunting, let me tell you about this, Owen. Bunting, here's what was going on with the bunting is, it wasn't bunting to move guys over. It was bunting for base hits because the catcher didn't get out of their seated animation or seated position, and the animation was slow to play out, and you wouldn't be able to get the guy at first. Right, TJ, isn't that the main issue there?
Suicide squeeds were crazy.
Was this new to MLB 15?
No, but since nobody could play online before.
Oh, okay, yeah. Well, now that okay, yeah, right. That explains
the popularity. Yeah, with the popularity of Diamond Dynasty and online in general working better, I think people started to be affected by these things a lot more.
Right,
and they were things that were happening in the years before, but.
But not in the same numbers, because nobody was playing online because the game was broken online.
Yeah, who's going to complain about bunts and steals when you can't complete a game?
You can't even hit.
Yeah, exactly. Right. And you know, all 20 of the 27 outs in a game are strikeouts, you know. So all that stuff was...
Well, that's only when I play against Rich.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's just rip on Rich for the rest of the show. He's no longer around.
I think I do have a video on YouTube where I think I struck him out like 16 times with Jose Fernandez.
My best story, okay, that's good, but my best story of playing Rich in the show last year was we met up in the ALDS of our online franchise. I think it went to 5 games, right? But either way, the great thing about this was anytime Rich starts to feel the game slipping away, he throws at your batter, and he got ejected, I think, twice in that series from throwing at me. And that was just great seeing the ump just toss him out. And it's like, Rich is not, you don't think he's really an emotional, like, aggressive guy. But in those moments, he didn't care. He's like, I was just going to yank him anyway, so I'll get him thrown out.
My greatest online performance was, and if he's listening to this, I apologize to him profusely, was I played a game against Aram Jabari of Sony Computer, Sony Computer Entertainment America, but they're called something else now. Anyway, he's the guy who is the deal for the show. And he wanted to play me online, and I took him – I played his Padres against the Blue Jays with R.A. Dickey. Oh. And he could not hit my knuckleball. Even with the improved online play, yeah. He could not hit my knuckleball.
Well, that was
it's funny. Go ahead, Mark.
Go ahead. I was just going to say, TJ, that was an issue, right, in Diamond Dynasty. Is there – you could get the low – wasn't there one player who was just, like, idolized? He was, like, a 60, but he threw a knuckler.
Yeah, Eddie Gamboa.
Yeah, exactly. And he was, like, the most desirable pitcher for the mode.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's actually funny. I played – I was like, let me take a break from Diamond Dynasty. Let me go play, like, a regular ranked game. First game I go into, someone's beating the Blue Jays with R.A. Dickey on the mound.
Yep. It's a game of timing, man.
Yeah. So that's why steals and bunts and all that, especially online, with latency, that those can be exploited even more. But even offline, I think it was, you can go back and the CPU bunted excessively offline. I think squeeze bunting particularly. There's another issue that with the bunting, where the suicide squeezes were almost automatic. So, that to me, you know, as far as gameplay goes, to me, there was nothing dramatic that they had to do this year, but fixing those issues were top of my list, and so I'm happy to see that. Another new feature for this year, a returning feature, is Sounds of the Show, which gives you 6 gigabytes of space to transfer in MP3s and apply them to walk-up and home run music and crowd chants and yells. All this stuff with Sounds of the Show, only for offline, unfortunately. I'd love to play online with this stuff, but for reasons that everyone can understand, you can't take those custom chants and stuff online. So, TJ, did you used to play with or did you used to utilize the Sounds of the Show on the PS3 version?
I think, like, once I loaded in some music for a closer.
Yeah. I mean, the potential is there, I think, to be interesting, but it's a lot of work, and I'm not sure people put in that much work for this stuff.
I would like to see how they instruct you how to put the music on your hard drive for this.
Yeah, so
because every time I've done this, whether it was with MLB The Show, whether it was with WWE, when it was with THQ or with, you know, 2K, it's been a real bear. Put it on the PS3 and I mean, if it's – I mean, obviously we're not talking about the Xbox here. Forget about that. But, you know, it's – it's the kind of thing where, you know, when you do get it loaded, because my favorite thing is I have a closer and he comes in to Police on My Back by The Clash, which is a great closer song, but I don't know how to get it on the console. And so long as they tell me how to put it on the console, I think it's a great feature. But if they're not going to do that, then why?
Yeah, if they don't do that themselves, I mean, I think they've mentioned it in some of the streams. As far as you just use a memory stick, plug it in the USB, transfer it in, and then it automatically shows up. I mean, that's probably a simple little.
Yeah,
more
I think
simple.
It has to be. I think it has to be in, like, on the flash drive. It has to be in a PS4 folder and then or a media folder, and then it'll see it.
Yeah,
if it's the same thing as the PS3 import, forget it. You're going to see, you know, people. I don't know how to put my sounds in the show. Mm-hmm. And they're going to be going, you know, you're going to have to Google how to do it. And you're going to have to be taken to an Operation Sports Forum page. Mm. Credit to our sponsors here. And then, you know, it's just going to be an esoteric thing.
Yeah, if they don't do that themselves, I'll put a video together of how to do it. If it ends up being difficult, I think that defeats the whole purpose. Because this should be pretty simple, and it should be a feature that appeals to people. But I think it is one that is maybe a little intimidating for some of the reasons you mentioned, Owen. Like number one, you have to get those sounds together. Now, you can pull in songs. Then you have to worry about getting, like, a strike on YouTube or something if you upload your videos, if you use some licensed music. But you can record your own sounds for, like, crowd chants and yells. So it's a lot of work to, you got to make that stuff or gather it yourself and then transfer it in and then apply it all. So I'll be curious to see how many people actually go that far. And this week, just this week, we got the first real details on presentation, which is, if there's one area of the show that is criticized more than any others, it's in presentation, particularly with commentary. Now, they didn't change out the commentary team this year, which is, I think, what a lot of people really want. But they did make a lot of additions to commentary, which should add into the variety and make it a little more dynamic and not the same thing over and over. I think it's just the issue people have mainly is that they're hearing the same people for the last, what, decade or so.
Well, but it's not just the same people. It's the same things. And to be honest, look, I don't begrudge Matt Vesgersian or Eric Karas or Steve Lyons anything. But if they're saying the same things all over again in this game, it's not their fault. It's the fault of the game that as it is programmed. And saying we've added new commentary is, to me, it rings about as hollow as we've added new animations. It's just we've done our jobs to refine the game the rest of the way. Unless they're talking about new actual, like, you know, they have a studio show or something, I don't consider, you know, we've added new commentary to be a new feature at all.
Yeah, and it's, they don't have a studio show. They have the radio show within Franchise and Road to the Show, which you remember, if you remember from last year, it would just basically tell you the scores and a few stats from around your league.
It was a nice inclusion, but yeah, it got old in a hurry.
Yeah, and it looks like it's going to be the same way this year with that. They compacted it a little bit and give you the information a little faster. They played an example, and it was pretty dry. It's the same thing telling you, you know, here was the score, this team had this many hits, that kind of stuff. But it, you know, it doesn't hurt the franchise experience or whatever in there. But yeah, the commentary, I mean, they played examples of it, which, you know, they selectively chose examples, of course, which sounded decent. I mean, they were good additions. But they've also played extended periods of the game on these streams. And people have noted, you know, in the comments, and I certainly noticed that, you know, for the most part, it just sounds the same. No matter, you can add new lines. We have thousands of new lines, but it just sounds so similar no matter what they're saying to what you've heard for so many years. And I think that's where the biggest issue, at least for me, comes in.
And especially when you're playing so many innings and so many games. I mean, Matt Vesgersian, I love the guy. I think he's one of the best calls in the major leagues, and certainly for his age. He's going to be around a long time. Hell, he could grow into, you know, the Vin Scully for the millennials. But in this game, you hear a lot of the same thing.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. And I mean, that's the thing, is you're playing, in most cases, you're playing 9-inning games that last 45 minutes plus. And you're playing long seasons, or you're playing short bursts in a Road to the Show, but you're situationally, you're hearing the same things. If you're a pitcher, you know, you hear the same things in Road to the Show said about you. If you're a batter, you hear the same things said about you. So this stuff has the tendency to get real repetitive real fast. And the funny thing is, you remember the stuff you've heard in previous years. Like, some of the stuff they added in, you know, it was really nice, it seems like, but then you hear something that's so familiar, and that's really what's distracting about it. TJ, your thoughts on commentary?
Yeah, I was just doing I'm going to do a Road to the Show as a closer this year, and I was playing around with him in 15. I accidentally gave him a fork ball, and literally every time he threw it, it was either every time he threw it or every batter, they would come up and be like, "Oh, a fork ball is essentially the same as a splitter, but you hold it deeper in your hand, so you get it slower and you get more break." It's like, you've literally told me this four times in this one piece of Road to the Show, and I know you're going to tell me it four times again in the next piece of Road to the Show. Yeah, that just got real frustrating. And you would think, since this team has been the commentary team for so long, that they would have recorded so much more every year that maybe you take some stuff out from last year and then you put it back in 2 years, or mix it up somehow. But I feel like they just keep adding on, and you know, baseball, keep hearing that stuff from 5 years ago.
Yeah, baseball's a tough one, because a lot, if you watch, when you watch a baseball game, the commentary is often, they go off on tangents because there's so much open time during games to just talk about random things. They're not intently calling, unless you're the radio guys do, but on TV they're not intently calling every pitch. They go off on tangents to talk about stories and stuff, and I think that's what they're starting to try and implement here, is more stories, more callbacks to previous events that happened.
I was going to say, I mean, you know, the baseball video games have never been as narrative as, I mean, you know, real life. I mean, even MLB The Show just sort of sticks to whatever is taking place on the field, and maybe they'll throw a bone to what happened in the previous week or in the previous season.
Right.
Rory McIlroy, PGA 15, really tried hard to be narrative in the way that you describe, because it is the most conversational of broadcast sports. But even they got, I think the fear is they get off on these long jags that you can't interrupt. Mm. It's really hard to interrupt those. You have to like program in a different interjection, you know, to like, you know, when somebody's talking about, you know, what so-and-so did back in, you know, Veda Pinson in 1961 did blah, blah. It's really hard to like interrupt that in a natural way when somebody is running to first. So, you know, I think they have a hard task ahead of themselves. But I also agree that what you do is when you add on to your library and you don't cull out, you're still going back to the same old stuff that everybody hears. And so the new things you've recorded, nobody hears them, and who cares?
Yeah. So other elements of presentation, they have three different broadcast packages this year, which include like three different score bugs and three different graphics packages essentially, and they're basing that on who's the home team, whether and I believe whether the game has a certain level of importance. So like a nationally televised game would have a slightly different broadcast package than just a home televised game. So there's that, which I thought was interesting. And then also they have a new default presentation option, which falls between the two extremes of what they've had before, the extremes of fast play, which just cuts out everything presentation-wise, and broadcast, which has everything that you have to skip if you want to get through anything. So this one in the middle is going to offer you a little of the presentation stuff, but still kind of speed you along a little better. So those, TJ, do either of those things kind of strike you in a certain way?
Not really. Did they mention if the hybrid presentation was going to be available online?
Yes, and it will not. Apparently, anything online is still fast play, which disappoints me also.
Yeah, because whooping you in the World Series last year was very disappointing when it was just like, and the Cubs win the World Series.
It is. Yes, that was great for you, and I was glad the game just ended. The thing about that is we'd have, even just within the games, hit a home run, you don't even get to see the guy around the bases, right? You know, it's deflating. You lose that opportunity to celebrate almost, because you're right on to the next batter or whatever. So I was disappointed with that, and I think that also will apply to Diamond Dynasty. So TJ, you won't be seeing much presentation. And that's where we're going next, Diamond Dynasty. Last year, they reinvented Diamond Dynasty, essentially, and it was a big winner. Everybody seemed to enjoy it. It won the Pasta Padre Community Award for the best team-building game. I mean, from out of nowhere, this was previously Diamond Dynasty was an also-ran. Nobody really even wanted to play it. So they did a lot of good things last year. They're adding on to that this year. Some of the things we'll talk about now, TJ, include the Inside Edge, ratings fluctuations, the ability to play against friends with your teams, new cards, new legends, and captains. So overall thoughts on what they're doing with Diamond Dynasty this year, TJ?
Love it all.
Love it
except all. For some stuff, but majority of it I love. Play with friends, that's huge. Used to do the, okay, we're going to hit X. 3, 2, 1, X. It's like, yeah, we got matched up. Most of the time would be, yeah, we didn't get matched up. But yeah, I love that. That's huge. The thing that I'm kind of sour on is the Inside Edge stuff. In the past, we've had the weekly updates, to the weekly roster updates, which affected the players' ratings in Diamond Dynasty. And now with Inside Edge, players are going to have attribute updates that change every day. I think they said it could be up to, like, 10 points up or down.
Yeah, it was 9 or 10, I think, yeah.
Yeah, so if you have a good player, but he's facing a tough lefty that day, you might take a huge hit to him for no apparent reason.
Well, I guess
not no apparent reason, but
yeah,
it's happening in real life.
Yeah, I guess the question would be, should that be a part of it, part of the mode? Should, and then also, if the you don't know what's going to happen in that night's game, so if you are a left-handed hitter and there's a tough lefty, he's facing Clayton Kershaw in the real game that evening. Who's to say that Kershaw doesn't get injured in the first inning and leave? And then that guy goes on to hit, four home runs. There's a lot of variables there. And then they're also using that, using kind of trends based on, hitting streaks or hitting struggles, slumps that guys are in to kind of penalize you. Now, they're keeping the ratings the same, but they're just fluctuating the card value essentially on a day-to-day basis.
Yeah, so I can't wait till a Monday rolls around where the roster update comes out. A guy gets a +3 to his overall, but then you go look, and because of Inside Edge for that day, he's going to have 8 lower contact than he had the day before.
Okay, so is this a bad thing, though? Because everything about the biggest issue with Diamond Dynasty last year was that there was essentially a group of guys that you would eventually acquire, and then you didn't ever have to change your roster, and you'd face teams, essentially the same people on every team. This is one way, and there's several others we can get to in a bit, one way that they're trying to encourage you to use different guys in your lineups. So if you have a Nelson Cruz and he's got a bad matchup for the night, you might
but have are you really going to go and take out Nelson Cruz if you had a bad matchup for that night?
That's a good question.
Or are you not going to care and you're just going to put him in anyway?
That's a good question.
I have two reactions to this, and both of them are bad. The first is that if you're trying to engineer people to sit, stay, trade, release, whatever players, I mean, one of the worst things – the reason that I don't play fantasy baseball is because I was always in leagues with people who wanted to trade every day. And I'm like, no, I'd like to set my roster and see how it performs for a couple of weeks and then evaluate players and then, act on those decisions. Mm-hmm. And if you're talking about Inside Edge, which – I mean, I haven't thought about Inside Edge since – MLB 2K, and even then I only used it really for where am I going to throw my pitches. This really seems to be enforced, micromanaging. That's the first reaction that I have to this. And in fact, I'm kind of so dispirited to hear that they're bringing this in to something that Diamond Dynasty really needed, like very stable online play to become relevant last year. Mm-hmm. And to bring in something that says, okay, great, now we're going to complicate it now, sort of to me just disincentivizes the whole thing that they finally stabilized last year. And I'm kind of upset with that. So I'm so upset with it, I forgot what the second thing I was going to say.
Well, it's funny. I wouldn't look at Inside Edge necessarily as the more concerning thing. Like, to me, it's the captains, which, TJ, I'd like you to explain, and I can tell you why. Like, I think the captains is maybe where they're unnecessarily complicating things. TJ?
Which is funny, because I actually find that the better way to do it than the Inside Edge.
See, we have different approaches to these things. I think I prefer the simplification, although that last year they could have done more to, they needed a bigger variety of cards and bigger variety of the way of performers, essentially, instead of here's the 9 guys who you know are the best, and once you get them, you're done. The captains, to me, is where they're complicating things, and I'm a, you don't necessarily have to deal with this stuff, but I think it's just another layer on it. So go ahead and tell me what you think of that.
And you can totally ignore all the captain stuff, which is nice, but you can't ignore the Inside Edge stuff.
Mm-hmm.
It's funny. So the captain stuff is, I guess, you pick a captain and you have certain missions that you can accomplish that are locked to that captain, like have guys that are over 6 foot, guys like over 6'2", and you'll get a rewards boost and stuff like that, and to unlock stuff. Which is funny, because that is the stuff that I really liked in FIFA Ultimate Team, where it would be like, okay, make a team of But your 11 starters have to be from three different countries, and you use that for a certain set of games and stuff. Hmm. And that was the stuff that I really liked in FIFA Ultimate Team, where it made you think, all right, let me get these guys to match up with these guys, and hopefully, and that'll work out well. And I think that's going to be a lot of fun trying to set up teams to work that way in Diamond Dynasty. And yeah, the captains, they'll, like in the past, you would rank up to level 30 in the game, which never really seemed to amount to anything. Like, you were supposed to get bigger rewards in Diamond Dynasty, but I feel like that never really happened.
Mm-hmm.
And now you have the, I think it's 8 different captains, or 6?
Yeah, I think it might be 8.
Yeah, it's either 6 or 8. And so inside, each of those captains is going to have, like, their own special store, which will have special cards that show up there that you can get. But yeah, I like that idea of you can not worry about these captain things and still play and have a good time. But the inside edge, I feel like that's more forced on you, trying to force you to have a different team.
That's interesting. I didn't know you'd have that opinion. I thought you were going to love all of this, TJ. You're usually into everything.
I'm into everything except for inside edge. That's because that's like forcing you to micromanage. If I want to micromanage, I want to have the ability and have a good reason to.
Well, I think the other aspect of it was that essentially the more stable and the more consistent guys you had, they're less likely to fluctuate. So a Mike Trout, I think they use as an example, is probably not going to be affected, or is only going to be affected slightly by this stuff, as opposed to, you know, a mid-level like replacement type player who would probably fluctuate far more based on matchups or slumps or hitting streaks than you would at that top level. So I wonder if it may only really heavily affect guys that may not even be in your lineup a month after or on your roster a month after the game comes out. I think we'll have to keep an eye on that. But I think I think you're onto something, though. If it's dramatic and starts to feel artificial, that's when it becomes a problem.
Yeah, and it's one of those things where, like you said, after a couple weeks, it might not be a big deal. But if you're in those first couple weeks and you hop onto your game and you're like, ah, my starting first baseman, who's my best player, he's got like 60 contact today because he's facing someone good.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I guess I'll just play tomorrow and not worry about this. And that was actually a thing. I think it was last year in Madden. They had a set of cards that were like Monday night somethings.
Huh.
And so they had like, they were like mid 80 rated, but then on Mondays they were like 90 something. So wow. If you just build up your team of those guys, not play during the week, and then you play on Mondays with a super team, you have a lot more fun.
Man, the lengths people go to in these modes, TJ, I'll tell you. Like, they used to just be get on and have fun. Now you're strategizing on certain times you should be playing. That's scary to me.
Yeah, and that's why I don't like the inside edge stuff, but yeah. I like the other stuff because you don't really have to worry about it if you don't want to.
Okay, makes sense. How about the new cards? So this is the other way they're trying to add variety. This is probably what I would look at as the primary way that they would add variety is new cards. So besides all the active players in the league that are affected by inside edge, you'll get these cards that are not affected by inside edge in any form or fashion. Flashback cards. So flashback to rookie. They have rookie ones, they have prime ones, and they have postseason ones. So there, you could get an Ichiro rookie card that's, you know, in the 90s, or you could get Ken Griffey Jr. He's not going to be in the game, but you know, somebody great in their prime. As opposed to, you know, they may have had one great year and you get their prime card and wait,
so they're not going to have Greg Jeffries in 1989?
I don't even know the reference.
I don't think they've announced all the 30 new legends for this year. So
did they not have Dave Magadan in 1990? I'm caning on the Nets.
Wasn't he the king of showing up in movies?
Magadan? No,
I think Kevin Elster was, but.
No.
There was someone on the Mariners, though, that was in every, what was the Twins movie with the kid? As a manager, right?
Big League.
Griffey was in that, but there was also, I thought it was Magadan.
Randy Johnson was in that, too.
Yeah, Magadan was in everything.
Magadan was in that because he says, I hope you die like a dog to Dave Magadan.
Dave Magadan was in a movie?
Oh, man.
I think they showed a highlight from one of the games.
Oh. See, the only thing I know is that Keith Hernandez was in Seinfeld all the time.
Man, I'm going to have to look this up now.
And Hair Club? Not Hair Club for Men.
Well, with Walt Clyde Frazier.
Yeah,
Yeah, not Hair Club for Men. It's Just for Men.
Just for Men. There we are.
Yes, right. Yeah, right.
Well, okay, now that we got that important stuff out of the way.
Yeah. No, I mean, I just, it's interesting to me that you're going to have, I think this is where, to put this back on point, you know, Madden has, you know, an Ultimate Team mode, which, frankly, everybody has copied. Actually, Madden copied it from FIFA, but that's beside the point. They're in-house. And but they have historical players in this. And so it's like if you're going to bring up this concept of here's a player that's, you know, it's protected from all of this inside edge crap, it sort of raises the point of like, well, where's the historical player? You know, where's, you know, where's Derek Jeter? Where's Mariano Rivera? And if they don't have them, you know, why? There is a group license available for retired players. I guess they can't buy it. I don't know.
Are they licensing them individually and they don't have to be?
Well, I mean, there are some players who are so big that they can't, if they actually do use their license likeness and not their name only, there are some, like, you got to go to the estate of Lou Gehrig and Babe Ruth if you're going to do that.
Mm-hmm.
But there is a group license for those who are in, and I think even like Roberto Clemente is in that. So it's like if you have a category of character, a category of card that is like, this is special and they are, you know, impenetrable to this thing that we have described as obnoxious, inside edge, you know, the fact that it's only current players, I mean, who's really going to give a damn if it's R.A. Dickey? So I would like – that would have meaning to me if it had legendary players in it is what I'm saying.
Yeah, so there are 30 new legends this year, so that'll take the total to 60. So they
must have paid a lot.
Yeah, so they're locked in with their ratings. And then these flashback cards are of the current of players who are currently active, but at different points in their career. So that's why Ichiro could have a rookie card. He could have a prime card and a postseason card. Although you'd have to really search in the Mariners' history to get that postseason run where they failed after winning 116 games. But, you know, the postseason one could be like a Madison Bumgarner when he was just mowed everyone down and was stunning in that postseason run for the Giants.
I want like a Chad Qualls around 2011. Can I get that?
You're so specific with these guys. I don't know about that one. we'll have to wait and see.
He's maybe still if playing, demand, right? So possible.
If demand is high enough, you know, it's possible. There you go, Owen. That'll get you into the mode.
Well, Jesus Christ, Julio Franco. I mean, he's like the latter-day Manny Minoso. I mean, that guy, I mean, you could get him in 89. He's like freaking RBI baseball original. I mean, you could still get him, couldn't you?
No, he is still an active professional for the Ishikawa Million Stars of the Baseball Challenge
League. See, you know, I knew there was a reason that having a Japanese baseball expert on this podcast was a help.
He's I think he's player coach for them this year.
Wow.
Dude's crushing it. What are you going to do? He's 57 years old.
Gosh. Well, you know, it's interesting to see that, you know, most of the stuff I thought was going to be positive. I didn't think we'd have some dissension here on these things, Inside Edge in particular. But it'll be interesting because this is a mode that's growing and it's taking on greater prominence in the show and these you know, revenue generating modes are taking on greater prominence in every sports game. So every little thing they do now is going to be highly scrutinized in these modes, and there are probably going to be some blowback on certain features, whether this year or next year or whenever. So it'll be interesting to monitor that.
And you didn't even mention the most important gameplay aspect of this.
Go for it.
Relief pitchers now have stamina that carries over from game to game.
I forgot that. And I was also going to say that the starting pitching is still random, which I don't particularly like.
Well, it's better than facing R.A. Dickey every single game.
It is, but they could do a rotation the same way that you do in franchise mode or something where your guys are just fatigued once you use them. Use R.A. Dickey. You got to use four other guys before you use Dickey again, right?
Well, don't they have a rotation effect in just normal online play too?
Yes, they do that in normal online play.
Yeah, so why that can't be? Well, I don't know. I mean, I guess that's a layer of complexity.
But then you change your pitchers out every time, so you don't have to deal with them being tired.
Yeah, I mean, I guess there's a way to defeat it.
Yeah, you know, but wasn't,
or you just
wasn't,
quit the game every time.
Wasn't there an issue with the randomness in the pitcher selection, though, TJ, where
the fourth guy was always coming up?
Yeah, your number four guy, right? It was the number four guy who you, 80% of the time, it randomly landed on. Yeah. So that was the other issue, is you never even got to use your number one starter, which maybe for online play is better because then you're not mowing everybody down. But
yeah, it's really funny. I was going through, looking at to see what my guy's stats were for last year, which... That might be my favorite thing in Diamond Dynasty compared to the other Ultimate Team modes. You actually get to see your stats from the year. So I saw like, oh, Anthony Rizzo played 120 games and he has 42 home runs. Mm. And then I look
at
my starting pitchers. I look at my starting pitchers and I'm like, oh, this guy, I used Nolan Ryan 9 times. That's great. If I could use him like 30 or 40 times in 200 games, that would have been a lot better.
Your games, yeah, you know, it should be. So yeah, I mean, they have a few kind of issues in design there, but things they can probably iron out.
And we still haven't found out what Battle Royale and Conquest mode are, which we're supposed to find out in a couple of weeks.
Yeah, that's still to come. They still have franchise mode to detail. That'll be next week, early March, and a few other things they have to go into. I mean, it's a game that's packed full of content. I mean, we praise it for that every year. And they're doing another great job with it this year. So I want to move on now to an issue that interested me a lot, and I know Owen covered quite a bit, and that's Take-Two, parent company of 2K Sports, being sued over tattoos. And it sounds ridiculous, but this is not anything new. This has happened before. EA has been sued over tattoos. Movie companies have been sued over tattoos appearing in films. The Hangover 2, the most prominent example of that. And now 2K is, they've gotten so big that they're going to be a target, just like EA has been a target in the past. And the company called Solid Oak Sketches suing them over the artwork that appears on LeBron James, Kobe Bryant, DeAndre Jordan, and a few others. The tattoos that they have on them, that they own the rights to because they created, and they've been recreated in the video game. They're seeking $800,000 in damages, okay? And they also offered 2K a deal of $1.1 million in addition to that. You know, what a deal, right? For 2K to have the rights for those tattoos for good. Wow, you know? If only they 2K had to pay $1 million for every 8 players' tattoos, they'd go out of business. So understandably, 2K didn't go with that, and they're just going to take it on in court. Now, this is an issue that companies have lost in court on already. There was one.
Have they, though?
THQ, well, they settled. Okay.
Right. You're right. Okay, so that's an important distinction.
Yeah, you're right.
But go
you're
ahead.
Right. So they settled, but I believe the settlement was thrown out and renegotiated, so it was... a long story, but that was THQ's UFC, and that's why Carlos Condit, he doesn't have certain tattoos. You won't even see him in EA's UFC right. games. Big tattoo in particular that they've had to take out because of that. And even if you look at CM Punk in this year's game, they have altered his tattoos, like the Pepsi tattoo and the Cobra Commander tattoo. They've altered those to prevent from getting sued. So... 2K now is in the crosshairs. They've got LeBron James as one of the players. Kobe Bryant is one of the players. And they even, part of their damages is that LeBron James appeared on the cover of 2K14 and that tattoo was visible on the cover of 2K14, which that shouldn't be a factor in this because that's him. It wasn't recreated for something, which is kind of where the distinction comes in that you can't recreate someone else's their designs. So without getting their express written consent or paying them for the licensing. So, Owen, I wanted to ask you, what do you think this whole situation with the tattoos and why didn't this happen sooner? Because we've had tattoos out of Madden for years and EA has been sued and THQ has been sued. And yet tattoos have stayed in the NBA games. I'm curious why you think that it isn't until now that they're being challenged on it.
Well, because there has been no judgment. That's the thing.
Yeah,
this has been a conflict that has been decided by money, and the decision is what has somebody demanded, and is that worth someone's money to make them go away? So, you know, what we're bearing on toward is, you know, is 2K going, okay, this is the NBA, this isn't the NFL. Our players appear in this game closer up. They're more recognizable. Their bodies are more recognizable. These are distinctive features of their bodies. And we feel that something that is a feature of their bodies is something that when we buy the right to their likeness under the agreement with the NBPA, mm-hmm. you know, that we're entitled to. And what is the cost of litigating that? That's the whole thing right here.
Yeah.
It's a little different when you get into individual fighters in, you know, a promotion such as the UFC or boxing. But, you know, the NBA is sort of where if there's ever going to be case law built upon who the hell owns a tattoo once it's inked on somebody's body, the design is one thing.
Yeah.
Is it a feature of someone's body more than it is a design is kind of the legal question. And I've had thought exercises with friends over this, and it's like, well, you know, sorry, who really owns that? Because as you mentioned, you know, with things like Cobra Commander, you know, and these other designs and Pepsi and that are, you know, it's the Superman logo, you know, are very distinctive and trademarked even. And if they're on somebody's body, I mean, if I tattooed the Chevy, you know, bow tie on my chest, and I'm, you know, a bare-chested fighter in Fight Night or
something. Have you considered that, Owen? Have you considered doing that?
No. The only time I ever considered a tattoo was when I was a sophomore in college, and it was my fraternity flag, and then I realized I would probably end up hating half of the people I was in the frat with, so that would be a bad idea.
Smart move.
But that never came to pass. To get back to this is, this has never – the reason this is ongoing is because – companies as large as Electronic Arts have decided it's worth it to pay money to go away. Now we have a company that's as large as Take-Two Interactive, and they have a product that prints money, which is NBA 2K. And the NBA, and I have to I've seen this with my own eyes. The NBA, they have a media day, they have a photo day, and players stand there in a T-pose, in some cases shirtless, and they have high-resolution photographs of their bodies taken. Mm-hmm. And I asked a designer on NBA Live, I said, what the hell is the purpose of this style book? And they said, I can't think of anything other than video games. Maybe if you're an advertising artist and you're showing, you know, LeBron James, you know, dunking a basketball into a bowl of Cap'n Crunch or something, and you want to have his, you know, what we do in life echoes in eternity tattoo, I think that's him. I don't know. You know, sure, if you want to be accurate about that, but it's mainly, I think, for video games. And so it's going to take a video game maker that makes a product that makes a hell of a lot of money that relies on the true-to-life representations of these players in a way that Madden does not. I know that there was a specific agreement that Colin Kaepernick had with
right.
the makers of his tattoos, and God, there are many. But he got permission on all of that stuff and sent it back to Tiburon, and they were happy with it. Okay, great.
Yeah, and so now we have Kaepernick. Just to add on there, Kaepernick in Madden 15 was the only player with tattoos. In Madden 16, Odell Beckham Jr. and Martavis Bryant joined him by getting the permission from their tattoo artists. And so now there's three players in Madden, but that's it.
Well, that betrays a great ignorance on my part because – I either thought that they had generic tattoos or I mean, anyway, to get back to it is NBA players are presented in a closer way. Mm-hmm. They don't have equipment on them the way that American football players do. And so the tattoos have a little bit more meaning. I mean, you know, the only athlete where they have more meaning would be in a combat sport such as boxing or MMA,
yes.
Which, you know, THQ was sued, as you brought up.
Yeah.
But THQ doesn't exist anymore, and, you know, getting sued over that is certainly not worth, you know, going to the the cost of going to court. It is with NBA 2K because it's such a moneymaker. It's such a cultural phenomenon. It is. It'd be like suing NBC over something.
Yeah. Do you think that they would take action the way that Madden did, or the way that the NFLPA did, which is, and this is the reason why there weren't the tattoos in Madden, is because the NFLPA a few years ago informed their players that tattoos would no longer be allowed in video games or merchandising. So, and not just video games, but like you were saying, it's a little harder to find a scenario.
I think the NBPA and 2K may, for the time being, decide, okay, this is verboten. Mm-hmm. But
boy,
at some point, yeah, this has got to go to a judgment. Because as you mentioned, this was in the Hangover 2, where Ed Helms' face was tattooed with Mike Tyson's face tattoo,
yeah,
as a gag. And it's like, you know, is this an interpretive satirical work, or is this something owned by someone else? And the people who made the Hangover 2 said, we don't give a damn. We're going to pay to make this go away.
Yeah, they were going to have to edit it, digitally alter the art on his face for the home release had they not settled that. Yeah.
Right. They added up the cost of altering the film, of continuing the litigation, or paying these people whatever it was they were opening their mouths for. And so it's the question is just how long does this have to keep pushing before it gets to a judgment of who owns a tattoo once it goes on the medium of someone's skin?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that is what is really intriguing to me, because, you know, like I said, if I went and I got the Barack Obama Hope poster tattooed on my face, and okay, I was licensed to appear in a video game such that you could not see my face without the Barack Obama Hope poster, which is based off of a photograph by an AP photographer, and who owns that? I mean, you know, you're really going deep into a wormhole here. So it's fascinating to me, because it just comes down to who owns what and how far are they willing to take it into the courts. And thankfully, we have a divided Supreme Court if it ever goes that far.
That's a great point. And the thing is, like, the value they're putting on this, Owen, like, $800,000 in damages for these 8 players, and then them wanting over $1 million for 2K to have the rights in perpetuity for.
Well, you know, I mean, I think
they can't afford that.
No, it's not worth it. Hold on. I think 2K can find $1 million.
Well, no, they could afford the $1 million for those 8 players, yeah, but then they'd have every other company every other tattoo artist that ever made one for a player coming after them too.
It's the precedential value, yeah, which I think is what might actually put this into court. It'll probably still be settled once it goes to court.
Yeah.
But I think it might go a little further than the other actions have. But the idea that 2K doesn't have $1 million laying around.
They can't afford to set that precedent.
No, because of the message that it'll send to anybody else. I mean, Christ Almighty, who's the guy who tattooed Abraham Lincoln on Deshaun?
Stevenson?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, even if you look at like MLB The Show, which is a game that tattoos really aren't that important, because they've got, you know, their uniforms are covering them mostly, Felix Hernandez has this giant neck tattoo that they don't have in the video game, and based on comments they made leading up to this release, it sure doesn't sound like they're even going to touch that water. They don't want to go anywhere near it. It's not worth it to them. But
because the licensing costs are just ridiculous in the first place. So I think the thing is, it's like if this ends up certified as an additional licensing cost, then, you know, then the makers of these video games will go, well, yeah, I'm not going to pay that. So we'll just they'll be clean skin.
Yeah.
But if a company that prides itself on this kind of art and this kind of realism says, we'll battle that, you know, and they can get it to a judgment, then who knows? But if it's another licensing cost, that's where this ends up more relevant to a video game consumer than just a thought exercise, which is the more licensing costs go up, the less you're going to get simulation quality games.
Yeah. Especially if it ends up costing more on an individual basis just for things like tattoos.
Yes.
That's, that's going to the extreme. They're already, you know, cutting it close as it is. To me, this is like this, like you said, it's kind of an authenticity thing, especially when you're talking about sports like basketball and fighting, where the players, their bodies are more exposed. And to me, yeah, I think you notice those tattoos, as far as you've seen those players many times and you recognize them, and it's a part of who they are.
Well, it's like, you know, how many times have we seen, I mean, God, over the decade, you know, in either NCAA football or Madden, you know, the fake advertisements around the stadium, you know, mm-hmm. knobby tires, synthetic, you know, you remember, you know, and you just sort of look at them and you laugh. And then if you were to see, you know, a knockoff tattoo that was somehow like a smirking, almost Grand Theft Auto-esque commentary on what was originally done there, I mean, it breaks the fourth wall. It just sort of is like, what? What am I looking at here on LeBron's body? I mean, it's almost unintentionally comedic.
Yeah, and the funny thing is that there are people, and I'll never truly understand it, but there are people who obsess over, particularly in the basketball games, shoes, socks, things of that nature. And the tattoos are a much bigger part, I think, of the game. So if, you know, you might have mentioned this, but do you think they would just go generic like Madden did and force players to get their get the tattoo artist approval? And if they did that, how much would that hurt the series, do you think?
I mean, if you put it on players to say, get your tattoo artist's approval, or we're not going to put it in there, I think you're going to see a lot of blank bodies. Because I don't think, I mean, you know, who's to say where the stuff came from? I mean, I also don't know the tattoo culture. You know, if I go into it, I've never gotten a tattoo. Yeah. So I don't know, you know, if I go in and pick something off the wall and say, yeah, I want a Tasmanian devil on my ass, you know, do I have to go to Warner for permission for that? Really?
Probably. I would think you probably would. You should find that out.
Is Warner the owner of that now, or is it Disney? Sure. I can't even remember.
I'm not sure.
I think it's Disney. They own everything.
Yeah, TJ, tattoos make a difference to you?
Not really.
Jeez, TJ, come on. Tattoos, who's
Dynamite playing? Dropping, right?
yeah, you know, it's going to matter differently to different people. I think, TJ, you generally play... Well, I mean, are tattoos a big part of FIFA? Are they in there? That's something I never really looked into.
I mean, you're playing so far back from the field.
Well, that's the thing, right? Yeah, and that's another aspect of the sports that we're talking about. As far as basketball, you get more close-ups, fighting games. It's all centered on the individuals. But then in football, you're zoomed out. In baseball, you're largely zoomed out.
You see them for like a half second in like the in-between clips, but...
Yeah.
It's never really that big of a deal.
Yeah. So basically, we're in a holding pattern on this. If they settle, there'll be that settlement could happen at any point coming up. If it goes to court, I mean, this could be years, a several year process before any determination is made. The question will be whether 2K decides to take preemptive action and say, okay, we don't want to get sued by anybody else starting from now on. So let's wipe all the tattoos off and make the players get approval like Madden has done. It'll be interesting to see if they do that, or, you know, they have, Take-Two certainly has the war chest to just say, you know, we're just going to go with it as is and try to fight this in court and deal with it that way. So it'll be interesting to see how that develops. Another piece of news, recent news here, and it relates to Pro Evolution Soccer 2016. It's the UEFA Euro 2016 add-on content that's coming to the game. It's free, and that's a departure from when EA had the contract in 2012 when they sold it as an add-on to FIFA 12 for $20, or FIFA 11. I don't remember all the years, and the mismatch years are tough to keep track of.
It was an expansion to FIFA 12.
Okay, yeah. Thank you, TJ.
Actually, Electronic Arts had the license from 2000 yes. to 2012.
Yeah, so in 2000, 2004, 2008, it was a $60 full retail release, contained every single nation that was involved in the Euro tournament, and included like all the stadiums and all the official kits and everything like that. And that was those were $60 releases. The 2012 was a $20 release from EA. In that, you know, there was a lot of disappointment around that game. or that add-on as it is, because there were only 20-some licensed nations out of the 53 that they had in the game. All the others were generic, no real players, no real kits. So that was a disappointment with that, and partially due to $20 versus $60. So you have the UEFA Euro content coming to Pro Evolution Soccer. It's free. So what do you get with that? It's going to be 15 licensed nations, 9 unlicensed nations, and it's those 24 teams that made the kind of the finals of this tournament. So it's not all 53 or 50, I believe it's 54 now, that are involved from the start, but just the tournament qualifiers. So of those 9 teams, there's one of them is even Belgium, which is a favorite to win the tournament, and that's kind of a glaring thing in this. And then there will be one new stadium as opposed to the 10 that are being used throughout the tournament. So, Owen, you know, you love to talk about Konami. Tell me what's going on with Konami. They've struggled to provide a roster update for this game, which, you know, a well-received game. People really like the game, but their post-release support has been awful. And we're coming off, you know, the rumblings of them not wanting to be in the console gaming business anymore. Then they acquire this UEFA Euro license, which EA had since 2000, like you mentioned. And this is all they do with it. What do you think about this whole situation?
My opinion is that Konami doesn't give a damn for making games people care about, and this is emblematic of that. You know, I'm serious. You look at what has happened with their business, is particularly with regard to, I'm going to go outside the genre now, but, you know, Hideo Kojima and Metal Gear Solid. I don't think anybody could have behaved more disgracefully than Konami did, as they did at the Academy of Interactive Arts and Sciences, where, you know, they don't have to show up and stand when everybody else does to applaud Kojima, but they weren't even there to accept the award that they published, you know, for the game that they published. And that's just infantile. And I swear to God, I'm not even listening to anything they put in my inbox anymore. I don't think they make video games anymore. And I don't think they make Pro Evolution Soccer anymore. I think they maintain some licenses that they acquired that their ownership now disowns. Okay, and they're just playing out the string. And I think that's sort of where you get into why of the 24 teams – and remember, past iterations of this, and I know that it was controlled by Electronic Arts, it has a lot more muscle, but they had all 53 teams in UEFA, now 54. But, you know, you could put in, you know, nations that didn't qualify if you wanted to and have a little fun with, I don't know, Scotland or Wales or whomever. But, you know, they have 24, and even that, they you know, half-assed it, and they only have 15. And as you pointed out, one of the favorites isn't somebody who's represented there fully, which is just sort of par for the course with Konami. If you look at, if anybody, I mean, you know, the Premier League, which is the league that most people in the English-speaking world care about, is represented by one team, and that's it in Pro Evolution Soccer. I think it speaks to just sort of a lack of corporate-level care for this game. The good thing about it is it's free. That's it. As far as it being anything, I mean, they're going to release a standalone version of this game. It's for PlayStation consoles only.
Yeah.
That'll get some people who don't listen to this podcast to buy it, maybe. But this is not indicative of Konami servicing the license, which I don't know how much they paid for, and I don't know when they bought it, because they're getting it for 1 year out of 4.
Yeah. And that EA...
Well, excuse me. I mean, they have the Champions League. Is that a separate thing?
Yeah, that's different.
Okay, so it's not like it was a package deal. I mean, no. So it's like they went to this trouble to wrest away from Electronic Arts and FIFA the UEFA Euro license, and they do this with it. I think it is... Just, you know, more evidence that this publisher doesn't care about making games for a console anymore, and it's going to make mobile free-to-play gambling crap,
yeah, casino
that nobody cares about.
Do you give them any credit for publicly coming out with these details in advance, because the big uproar with what EA did in 2012 was that they did not specify that the Euro content was missing a whole bunch of teams.
I give their developers
release day. People discovered it on release day after they bought it. And so here you have a month in advance, Konami at least saying, hey, here's the licensed nations we have. Here's the ones that are unlicensed. You know, but it's free, like you said. So
I give their developers credit or sympathy because I think they're the ones holding the bag, whether that is the team that they created in the UK 2 years ago, you know, which is now, I'm sure, withering on the vine, or the lead team in Japan, with same thing. I give them credit for being honest about it. I don't have any respect for Konami on a corporate level.
Yeah. Well, you established that. you know, they've definitely brought on a lot of criticism, justifiably so, from people. And this was kind of their plan was probably always to release this for free, but they used it as a way to apologize for the roster struggles that they had, the roster update struggles, which, you know, seemed a little disingenuous to me. Or like, oh, because of this trouble, we're giving you this for free. And I think it's, you know, they're going to try to leverage it more to strengthen their brand as a whole, to say, you know, yes, we have this license. Yes, promotionally speaking, in April, we'll have a separate release of the game, probably for $60, when people can really just buy the game now for $30. So they're trying to, you know, leverage it for publicity, for marketing, and for awareness. And if they fall short in people's expectations, I'm not sure what good that does for the brand going forward. So that's all. That's a late March thing that'll be coming out, the add-on, and we'll talk more about it probably when it comes out. So one more thing I want to hit on in the show. And,
hey Brian, can I actually say I would like to say something about that? Maybe I would.
Well, yeah, you're here. Go for it.
I know, and usually I am on top of the heap of people that want to poop on Konami for not having all the licenses in the game. But I really can't fault them here, because even when EA was doing it, they were having issues with trying to get all the licenses for this. And I think even in Champions League, I think EA still had a couple teams that might not have been in there. Yeah, it seems maybe this is just a problem endemic with some of those country clubs, that they just don't want to be licensed, or they want some astronomical number. Seeing that this has been a problem in the past, I don't want to completely blame it on Konami for not having all the licenses in there.
Yeah. You know, that's a fair approach to it, too. Is it, what is out of their hands is something that we're not really in tune. You know, we don't have the details on necessarily. We can only compare to what's happened in the past, which was EA was, generally speaking, able to acquire these licenses. Now, the investment that these companies are making in licenses, for the most part, is lower than they were willing to make years ago, especially if they plan to only sell this for a few bucks or give it out for free. They weren't going to put a whole lot of money into it. So the impact will
see what
happens.
I mean, I have to bring this up. Yeah. I don't know for a fact. But, you know, EA put 53 teams into its UEFA DLC.
Yes.
How many of those were not qualified teams that, you know, when we're talking
so
about
30 or 29. 29 were teams that did not make the final tournament.
It's a 24-team tournament.
Right.
I guess what I'm saying is, if you have 53 teams and you don't have 20 of them, are the 20 of them ones who aren't in the final round?
Yeah, the thing with that one was, and I'll have to pull.
I know they didn't even have like the host country team.
Yeah, that was
stuff.
The thing. The host.
Okay,
country.
Well, yeah, Ukraine and Poland back in 2012, right?
Yeah, so that was the thing, is that it wasn't just the nations that were really not involved or the nations that had no chance. There was the host nation was one that was missing, which was pretty.
I just think even Belgium might have been a problem then too.
I just think it's a lot worse when you look at, frankly, the sample size, which is something that's a term that sports fans love to toss around. If you're dealing with 53 teams and you have a bunch that aren't in fully licensed, you know, that's one thing. If you're dealing with 24 and nearly half of them aren't fully licensed, that to me signals a little bit more of I don't give a damn you know, for the people who are actually cutting the checks for this sort of thing. And it should matter to Konami, which is in a lesser position, particularly on a licensing basis, when they have the UEFA exclusive license to get all of these teams into their game. And they didn't. They either didn't care to, or the cost of that was more than they were willing to bear for this game, which says something else about their corporate priorities. And I'm not going to excuse them for that.
Yeah. Hey, I agree with that. And I'm sure we'll revisit this in a month or so when it comes out and we get kind of the reaction to it. How well, you know, did they just throw teams in there? Is there a proper tournament structure? Is they only added one of the 10 stadiums? I mean, we'll be able to assess it a little better then and say, you know, what was the impact of not having certain things licensed and certain nations licensed? And we'll see. And if Belgium goes on to win it, I think that would be hilarious for this reason alone. So one more thing to hit on tonight, and I brought this up at the top of the show, was the new NBA Live mobile game, which is right now it's only on Canadian stores. It's coming to the U.S. and other regions soon. If you're outside of Canada, you can create a Canadian account on iOS and download it. Or if you're using Android, you can grab the APK online and sideload it. It's a real simple process to do so if you actually want to go out of your way and start playing it now. TJ, have you played those mobile version games of FIFA and Madden?
I played FIFA a while ago, back when it was still like a full game and not Ultimate Team.
Different.
But I played some of Madden Mobile this year, and I think I uninstalled it like yesterday.
Okay, so NBA Live Mobile, it's similar in concept to those, right? It's centered on building up a team. You're starting with, you know, a pretty poor roster of players. You're not playing with the actual NBA rosters, and you're playing short games. They're 2-minute quarter games in what's called a season, and various challenges called live events to build up the currency that you're getting and to earn various rewards. I did a lengthy review of this for Sporting News, so if you're at all interested, I suggest checking that out, because I go through the basics and all the different modes and what works really well and maybe what it struggles with. To sum things up, though, you know, I've never been a fan of team sports games on mobile, particularly those which utilize on-screen controls. It just doesn't work, and for the most part, and you've seen that because developers agree, because most sports games now are based on this kind of card battle concept or a team building model. So the ultimate team concept, actually, with the NBA Live mobile game, I think it works really well, because it's part of this whole simplification of the product. It's simplification because you're only juggling a small roster. You're juggling essentially your starting five. You don't really deal with a bench unless you want to set up these. They have these different types of rosters you can set up. But you're only juggling a few players, as opposed to Madden and FIFA, where you're dealing with a double-digit number of players. And then in the in-game playing is pretty simple, too. The controls on the screen work well. There's only a few actions you really need to worry about executing. On offense, that's driving to the hoop and shooting threes, and on defense, that's blocking shots or attempting to steal. There are the live events, which are pretty unique challenges, and they have those bonus rewards, which can be exciting to get or to start with your collections. All of that makes it pretty enjoyable, and there's long-term interest in completing these sets, which are collections, which eventually you turn in to get these really coveted cards. The only real flaws that I found are that the actual gameplay is way too easy. I've played probably 75 of the season games now, and I haven't lost, and there hasn't been, I can't remember one time where I was actually challenged. Most of them are blowouts that I end up putting on autoplay and have the AI just finish it out for me. And the turn-based head-to-head, which makes sense, I think, in the way they designed it, but it doesn't work in practice because I haven't had opponents accept a single game. It might just be because they get a challenge. So this is the way the head-to-head works. It is the person who challenges plays the first and third quarter against the other team's players controlled by the AI, and then the opponent plays the second and fourth quarter against the other team's AI. So the problem is I'm sending challenges by playing the first quarter, and they're probably seeing me like up 15-2, and they're like, no thanks. I'm not getting into that now. So those are the only real issues with the game. But overall, I really like it, and I said this on Twitter – and I still stand by it. I don't know how it's possible, but this is probably the best thing NBA Live to come out of NBA Live since, you know, NBA Live 2010. It does some things remarkably. It does some things better gameplay wise than the console version. Things like rebounding, and I don't know how this is possible, but it's true. So I suggest, you know, when that comes out in the U.S., or if you're really interested and want to get it now from the Canadian stores, or downloading it online, it's actually really good. And check out my review on Sporting News. So that will, I think, do it for the show today. And I want to thank everybody for listening. Our next full panel podcast will probably be the EA Sports UFC 2 review roundtable in mid-March. Before then, there will be one or two others featuring developer interviews and potential discussion on any other news that might take place in the next few weeks. So again, thanks everybody for hanging in with us and listening to the show. For myself, Brian Weedeye from Pasta Padre, Hit the Pass and Sporting News, Owen Good from Polygon, and TJ Larriman as That Sports Gamer from Out of the Park Developments. Everybody take care.